Well, I love Andrew. Sophie has pointed out that you're bringing Mosaic kind of culture to church. We do Minute to Win It stuff every week at Mosaic. And you can never have too many games. And I wouldn't say you've kind of stolen my thunder, but you've doubled up because I'm starting with a game as well. So I've got a chocolate fish for the first person to come and grab it. Oh, there we go. Out of the blocks. Okay. Now I need two people. You got to be quick. Come on, two people. Whoa. Okay. All right. Another chocolate fish. All right. Okay. So stand back to back here. Turn around. Oh, yeah. So you stand there. Back up. Okay. Now, this is a bit of a longer race. You've got to get all the way around all the chairs. And back here, you need to be especially careful with power cords and pianos. And your chairs are quite tight in that corner. But everybody, all the people are kind of fair game. If they get in your way, just follow on through, okay?
You're actually not supposed to run through
that. You need to figure that out as you go. Are you ready?
No.
I really like kind of how you had kind of a Peter Snell finish to the race as well, like lunging for the line. I'm out of chocolate fish. I'm sorry, that's it for the day. Hey, in the Bible today, we meet a man who wrote passages, and I think he'd probably watched some races in his life. I reckon he'd probably been watching marathons maybe in the old Roman Olympia kind of things. And he said following Jesus is a bit like running a really, really long race, not just a short sprint like what we've seen here. So what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to imagine yourself going on a really long journey with all these people in the room. Look around. Oh, it's not off to a good start if we start with, oh no. That's the attitude of we're never gonna make it. Hey, Sophie and Joshua, if you guys could hand out all those delightful things we've got at the back there. Imagine you're going on a really long journey with this group of people. What would you like them to take with you? And what would you like them to leave behind? Imagine if someone took name calling on the journey. Imagine if someone took unkindness. Imagine if someone just took being unfriendly, or anger, or selfishness, just being a meanie. While you've got this rock, you might like to think of something that you've been carrying for a while that feels like a bit of a heavy weight. Let me read that Hebrews passage that we heard earlier one more time. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a huge crowd of witnesses to the life of faith, let us strip off every weight that slows us down, especially the sin that so easily trips us up, and let us run with endurance the race God has set before us. We do this by keeping our eyes on Jesus, the champion who initiates and perfects our faith. Because of the joy awaiting him, he endured the cross, disregarding its shame, and now he is seated in the place of honour beside God's throne. Hebrews, this passage is from, is kind of a one really long sermon. It's not a letter kind of advice to troubled churches like some of the other letters are. It's a sermon, and you can feel that in the language of it. It's got this kind of rhythm in this passage that we're looking at today. Just before it, there's this phrase that keeps on coming, weaving through it. By faith, so-and-so did this. By faith, so-and-so did that. By faith, by faith, by faith. And this letter is written to a small church, probably meeting in Rome, made up largely of people who had come to Christ through a Jewish background. They weren't kind of Greek or Roman kind of culture. They were probably from a Jewish background. And because of that, the letter has got all these examples of the heroes of Israel's past. And the writer is using these as examples, as springboards to get his listeners to not look back at the past, but to look forward to Jesus. And this letter, it's written during the 60s, not the groovy 60s, the 00 60s, about 30 years maybe after Jesus' death. This church is maybe 25 or 30 years old, about the same age as your church, I found out this week. And it hasn't been plain sailing. About 10 years probably before this letter was written, a lot of the church was kicked out of Rome by the emperor. And then there was a big fire, and the emperor blamed that on the Christians as well, and used that as an excuse to kind of persecute and go even harder on the church at the time. So this letter comes to a church that's been under a lot of persecution, and things are heating up again. Now, you guys meet in this lovely space, but imagine instead of meeting here, you met in secret. Maybe you meet in the basement of someone's house. Maybe you meet in the basement downstairs, and this is a building for something else. I hear it's a bit moldy and dank down there, really. Is that the best word for it? Maybe you lit candles as you met, not because you were like secretly Anglican, and they do set a nice mood, I know, but because you didn't want the neighbours to see you had the lights on. You didn't want to see that there was a crowd gathering and arouse suspicion. Imagine every time you heard footsteps out the door, the whole community would go silent and you would stare and wonder if soldiers were about to burst through the door. Well, that is, in fact, we know, the reality for a lot of churches around the world still today, not just the church this letter was written to. Being a Christian, to believe that Jesus was God's Son and had risen from the dead and was the true King of the world, was an exceptionally dangerous thing to do for this community, and it still is for some people today. That's the context that this letter comes to this community in. A church that has known persecution in the past and for whom life is difficult again now. And with all this pressure mounting, some in the community are wondering. Some are starting to falter. Some are thinking, how do we keep going through all this? And that's understandable, right? You might even feel that same way yourself sometimes. I love the video we played earlier of Peter Snell. My favourite Olympic event is the marathon, personally. And I like it because it's such a long event. It's like test cricket, you know? There's a bit of build-up. And, I mean, there's a result in this usually, at least, which is nice. But these guys and girls are out on the street for hours running. Actually, did anybody see they've almost gone under 2 hours in marathons now? Bonkers. But they come back into the stadium right at the end of the race, and they just look smashed. But then when they're right at the end, when they're feeling their worst, they come into this environment where this crowd erupts as they come in and start cheering them on. And everyone knows this is the biggest race of these people's lives, and they're willing, these athletes, to give it their all to the very, very end. Similar but different, I love watching my kids' cross-country races. And some of you will have done this. Our kids at our school, they kind of all sit in their classes or age groups in the middle of the school field, and all the parents are kind of around the outside. And I try and like either run up to them or get their attention and just give them a bit of a thumbs up and say, go for it, you know, before they start the race. And I can see as they recognise that I am there cheering them on, that their spirits are buoyed up by my presence. Have you ever thought that there are people cheering you on in faith? This passage suggests that. That maybe Paul, that David, that Moses are cheering you on. And even more importantly, I think, to be reminded that everybody here in this room wants you to win at faith. That's what the writer is saying to this church and to you. Whatever you might be struggling with as you journey in faith, as you're tired, maybe as you feel like you're faltering and you're wondering if it's worth it, as you struggle along this journey and witness with each other, as you try and figure out what it means to live wholeheartedly for Jesus in Spotswood, there is this great cloud of witnesses, all these heroes who have also run the race, who have suffered and struggled and grieved and groaned, but have also endured. And you can too. You can too. Even though the life of faith is difficult, through community and prayer and encouragement, you can overcome the challenges. They won't overcome you. Secondly, I think these examples of Old Testament heroes give us inspiration for a number of reasons. Because there's a few interesting things that is immediately before the section in Hebrews 12 that lists off all the Old Testament kind of champions. And most of them are, well, you know, like, screw-ups is too strong a word, but it's kind of getting there. dubious moral choices is what we would say about them. And one of my favourite phrases, unevenly sanctified. That's a great one, eh? Does anybody else feel unevenly sanctified? To inspire us, the writer calls on Abraham. Great guy. But we remember Abraham doesn't believe God is going to fulfill his promises. So his wife, Sarah, and him think that he should have a baby with his servant Hagar as a way to solve the problem. Later, when Sarah does get pregnant, they cast Hagar and Ishmael out. Abraham is held up as a model of faith in Hebrews. His actual life was not clean or straightforward. Abraham's grandson, Jacob, selfishly lies and deceives his father to get what he wants. Moses killed someone. David was an adulterer and essentially killed someone too. It could go on. What does this tell us? You don't need to be perfect to be used by God. You seem to just have to be willing. Are you willing? Lastly, even though in most of these stories these heroes of faith were involved with God for most of their lives, actually a lot of them never got to enjoy the final part, the fulfilling of the promise God was leading them towards. They were on the road with God, but they were often just a part of the puzzle. Moses didn't get to the promised land, even though he gets the people out of Egypt. David never sees his temple, even though he sets up the kingdom of Israel. We have a terrible curse, I think, in the church world where often we conflate observable growth with faithfulness. I wonder if most of these heroes would fail on that metric. Jesus, remember, was mocked on the cross because he couldn't save himself. What a failure, some said. At Mosaic, this not seeing the fruit thing is something I think about often, actually. We're just a small little youth group, really. We're just a part of the puzzle in young people's lives. But we believe Mosaic can have a real impact in young people's lives because we know that God will be involved in their lives long after they leave our ministry. We probably won't be the people who see the fruit of our ministry. We might never know the long-term impact we've had. That's the reality. But a seed not sown is a seed that will never grow. And so we start. And we show up each week and we encourage each other that each of these young people, they matter to God. They are worthy of our time. They deserve to have a gospel community bringing a message of hope and love and grace into their lives. There's so much going on in this short section of Hebrews 11 and 12. It's a great passage to dwell on when you've got some time. Paul uses this metaphor of a race. If you're mid-race in your life of faith, how's it going for you? Are you feeling strong or are you struggling? He urges us to remember there's a supernatural spiritual component to this life of faith that is mysterious, that we don't understand, but he wants to draw our attention to, that all those who have gone before us, including these Old Testament heroes, are cheering us on and willing us on. And he wants you to run your race well. Maybe the most important thing we can do is to be intentional and to do the work of addressing sin in our lives. I know we sometimes struggle to talk about sin these days. God doesn't want you carrying around heavy weights in your life. Cast them off, he says. And I believe he says that because he believes it can be done. And I would encourage you, if you don't believe that, or if you don't know how to address a particular thing in your life that you're struggling with, ask for help. That is what pastoral ministry is so much of about, is helping people thrive and come into a fuller, more wonderful life with God. And we do this because we have confidence. There is a God who loves us, who has initiated faith in us with the hope that it will grow in us. And that this God is at work in our lives. Jesus has already won the race. He endured the cross and is risen in glory. We can have faith that that same power that enabled him to be victorious in the cross is at work in us. Can I give you a little challenge? Hopefully you've all got a rock. Take your rock home and put it somewhere awkwardly obvious, like the middle of your dining room table or something like that. And I would encourage you, maybe even tonight, use it as a prompt to spend some time in this passage. Read through Hebrews 11 and 12. Take you about 10 minutes, maybe 5 minutes probably. Even if that's not something you usually do on a Sunday evening, why not try something new? Netflix will still be there tomorrow, I assure you. If you want to be like A grade, light a candle. It'll help you focus. Ooh, those Anglicans, they're onto something. Let me finish again just by reading this passage, one part of it again, because it's powerful if we listen to it with our heart and our spirit and ask God in prayer to help its power be at work in our lives. Why don't you just close your eyes for a moment and we'll close with this passage. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a huge crowd of witnesses to the life of faith, let us strip off every weight that slows us down, especially the sin that so easily trips us up. And let us run with endurance the race God has set before us. Amen.